A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 178. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about the Jensen Code. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
The Jensen Code was a 13-part children's adventure serial that aired on ITV in 1973, and it really fit the classic children's adventure mold with some spooky and mysterious things happening along the way and a slowly developing science fiction plot that comes in as you go.
That's right. An interesting show from the early 70s. Originally, we know, broadcast in colour, but interestingly, only a black and white copy survives, and that's what we've been watching. We'll talk more about that when we get to our production notes. And as well as having these interesting children's adventure elements and some sci-fi themes as we go along, we've also got some very familiar faces cropping up, perhaps in unusual roles as we go along, Brian. There'll be a few names to mention as we proceed.
Yes, absolutely. It has quite an interesting cast for what we know those actors from, and also just because it's quite a good cast and works quite well.
Okay, so the setup of the Jensen Code begins with a group of teenage boys who are on a sort of an outward bounds adventure type course. So they're in a residential place, they're staying in a bunkhouse, and they're off doing various outdoor activities with instructors. And we start quite literally in a cave with one of the boys, a guy called Terry, who is doing some potholing with one instructor, and the instructor has gone to retrieve a dropped torch. And it's a strange start, but we're away from there, Brian.
Yes, it's interesting because it's a jump into the story where we already have things going on, and it's sort of quite uncomfortable and uncertain, a strange situation for this central character, Terry. And it appears to be hours later that the instructor comes back, and the instructor says it's only been a few minutes, but Terry feels that it's been much longer. We're wondering how much time has passed, and it seems that maybe quite a bit of time has passed, and we don't understand why this instructor wouldn't realize that. So there's some strange things with time passing right from the beginning there. And we are also wondering who these mysterious strangers we see staying at a farm nearby to this cave and to the bunkhouse where they're staying and all of these other things are.
Yep, some strange and mysterious elements for us to talk about as we get into what the Jensen Code actually is as the adventure proceeds. But first we'll do our usual run through the main characters. There's actually quite a lot as we go on, but if we start with the ones who we see, I suppose, earliest, I've mentioned Terry, who's our teenage lead, whose voice, his voiceover narrates a lot of the action. So this is a program with a voiceover, which is slightly unusual. I don't think we see too many of these in these sort of children's adventure shows.
It's a first-person narration as well, so it's sort of an interesting character piece.
Yes, it is. That's right. And interestingly, again, Terry was played by a recognisable actor, David or Di Bradley, who is most famous for playing the lead role in Ken Loach's 1968 movie Kes. A very famous movie, very famous black and white British movie. If you've not seen it, I highly recommend it. But here he is cropping up 5 years later in this TV show. And we've also got the other lead character we see in that first opening scene in the cave. And he is the instructor, Alex, played by Tony Wright. And it's, as you say, Brian, his disappearance and then reappearance hours later when he thinks that almost no time at all has elapsed, that starts the mystery off for young Terry.
Yes, that's right. And we have other instructors from the camp involved, particularly Gordon, who is a younger instructor and at least at the start appears to be more sympathetic to Terry's point of view and what Terry thinks has happened. But we're left with a bit of a mysterious character with Gordon, because quite early on we get the feeling that we don't know exactly what his motivations are. What exactly is he doing? Gordon was played by Brian Croucher, who is probably best known for playing Travis, the second actor who played Travis on Blake 7. And here he is a few years earlier as this rather different but quite interesting character in this story.
Yeah, the first of the very recognizable genre faces we're going to be talking about as we go through.
Yeah, absolutely. Mr. Richards was played by Milton Johns, who's sort of a sinister figure at this farmhouse, and he is part of a group who is pursuing what we will learn is the Jensen Code and trying to get this code. And we know Milton Johns, especially recently, from Doctor Who, The Enemy of the World, which, of course, was recently recovered, was missing, most of the serial was missing, and then was recently recovered in an exciting Doctor Who find recently. Milton Johns was also in War and Remembrance in 1986, playing Eichmann. So you can get the feeling that he is an actor who sort of specializes in playing these sort of unsettling kinds of characters, as he does here.
Yes, lots of bad guys for Milton Johns, and he always plays the roles with a certain amount of relish. And he is, you know, he's one of these mysterious figures at the farmhouse, and he's very good here, actually. I think he gives it a certain gravitas to the role of the bad guy.
Yes, absolutely.
And, of course, we've got the program itself called The Jensen Code. So we will meet Dr. Jensen, played by Leon Eagles. He is a scientist. We meet him fairly on, but as the series progresses, we'll find out what's going on with his particular project, what his involvement is, and we'll also start to find out why some of these more mysterious characters are interested in Dr. Jensen, and of course, as the name suggests, his code.
Yes, he's a bit of an enigmatic character, and I think also brings some gravitas to it. He's sort of a good character to have embedded at the center of things there.
Okay, so cracking on with the code and with the plot itself. As we've said, Terry's tale of his abandonment in this cave while potholing with Alex, and the fact that Alex disappeared for hours and then came back not knowing that he'd been gone for more than a few minutes, this tale's not generally believed. The instructors don't believe him. Certainly the other lads on the course make fun of him for it. He perhaps gets a slightly more sympathetic hearing, as you said, Brian, from Gordon. But apart from that, he's really sort of ostracized for this strange tale. And perhaps slightly strangely for an outward bound course, his punishment is to be sent off on a solo hike by himself, which seems slightly unusual. I mean, I think, you know, I remember from these sort of Duke of Edinburgh and Outward Bounds courses, it'd be not unusual for a group of teenagers to be sent off together, but to send one off unsupervised, slightly odd. But there we go. It does allow for Terry to do some more investigation, though.
Yes, he is sent off not only on a solo hike, but a solo overnight hike with, you know, no means of communication. They're just going to check in on him to see that he arrives where he's supposed to stay overnight, because he had been told, you know, well, you obviously are, you know, you can't take the caving, so you can do this instead. a little strange, but as you say, it certainly helps to forward the plot here. He learns that there is a Ministry of Defense research facility that is sort of right nearby in the area, and his suspicions are aroused by this, and he starts poking around and investigating a little bit further. And he witnesses Alex, the instructor, who appears to be somehow brainwashed or somehow not himself, along with basically a thug who we've learned is called Kurtz, kidnapping Dr. Jensen and sort of setting up this trap to kidnap Dr. Jensen. And back at the bunkhouse, he reports his concerns to Gordon. And Gordon suddenly tells Terry that he's actually a security agent with the government and has his own agenda.
Yeah, that's right. The plot thickens. Gordon makes the first of, shall we say, several shifts in his character by revealing himself to be working for the government and interested in what's going on. And as you say, Brian, we found out that there's some bad guys. They want Dr. Jensen. They've got Dr. Jensen. And they want something that Dr. Jensen has, namely this code. And it's a 13-episode show, so there's going to be quite a few twists and turns along the way. It gets more complicated as we go on, I think, Brian. And certainly when we get to our next episode, we'll talk about how some of the science fiction elements start to come into this story.
Yes, absolutely. There are lots of enigmatic characters in this and lots of sort of development of us learning what's going on and where these different characters really stand.
I'd like to hear what happened yesterday.
You've heard
from you. What happened, Terry?
Thought I'd left him up there all alone for 2 hours, didn't you?
What made you think that? 2 hours, eh?
10 minutes while I searched for a torch he dropped.
That all?
Oh, we had the full works, visions, the lot, the full hysteria.
What did you see, Terry?
Come on, lad, I'm not a mind reader.
A bloke.
Down the pot?
Outside.
Seems possible.
He was hiding.
Hiding?
Spying on us, huh?
Did you get a good look at him? Big bloke?
The Phantom of Wilmer Potter. Oh, there you are, lad. There's your map. Now you can get your rucksack from...
So, turning as ever, as we like to our production notes, and to let you have whatever details we've managed to sort of find ourselves, we don't have an awful lot about the Jensen Code, but we know that this was an ATV television company production. That was one of the divisions of ITV, and here they are producing this program for the ITV network. Again, we know it's written by Kerry Harrison, who was the son of the actor Rex Harrison. I understand Kerry Harrison probably best known as a novelist, but here he is writing for children's TV. But quite interestingly, the credits for the individual episodes always mention the script editor, and it's a very familiar name again. It's Philip Hinchcliffe. So there's a certain Hinchcliffe sort of flavour and inflection to this story, I think, Brian.
Yes, it's interesting because, of course, just a couple of years later, Philip Hinchcliffe would be producer of Doctor Who. He never script edited for Doctor Who, but certainly was producer in the mid-1970s. And was known, along with his Doctor Who script editor, Robert Holmes, for having one of the scariest and one of the best eras for classic Doctor Who. So very interesting to see him popping up here in the script editor position. It was The Jensen Code was produced by Alan Coleman and directed by Jonathan Wright Miller. It features, as we mentioned, appearances by a variety of different familiar actors. We have a fairly small but recurring appearance by John Levine, who of course was Sergeant Benton on Doctor Who. He's playing a policeman in this. Jeffrey Beavers, who was the master in Doctor Who, the Keeper of Trachan, and also many of the Big Finish Doctor Who audios. He appears in this. Carl Howman, who was in a Blake 7 episode called Shadow, appears as well. So it's quite interesting to see these various people showing up in this. Of course, as we've alluded to, the caving scenes or potholing scenes were quite important to this, and they were filmed at the Clearwell Caves in the Forest of Dean. So having that real cave system to be able to film in added a lot to this.
It certainly does, and I think you're right. I think all the caving scenes are actually filmed in location, as it were. I don't think there's any sets. And later on, when there are sort of escapes and rescues in the caves, it's all given a real sort of very realistic feel, because there they are, the actors who seem to be struggling in these muddy and wet and dark potholes and caves. So it is quite impressive.
Yeah, you also have views of, you know, one person standing on a higher ledge looking down at another, and these types of things that, you know, have interesting angles and are quite good.
And of course, the Clearwell Caves bring with them one remarkable piece of trivia, which I found on the IMDb page, and I'm going to share with you now. IMDb reports that in the making of this television program, that there is a plaque at Clearwell Caves which commemorates an incident when a technician, a lighting technician, was trying to lay some cable in order to light a scene, and apparently an elderly man appeared to him and showed him a different or a shorter route through the caves to lay his cable. And then, of course, this man disappeared and nobody could find out who he was. There were no other sort of sightings of him by the crew. But then other people who visited the cave said, oh, yes, he's always turning up. Nobody knows who he is. He's assumed to be a ghost. Now, if anybody has visited the Clearwell Caves and can tell us whether there actually is a sign about this, we'd be delighted to hear about it. This wonderful, obscure moment from the production of this show.
Yes, if you've seen that plaque or if you have a photo of it, please let us know. I'd love to see a photo of that plaque on our Facebook group.
Yeah, that would be great. Please do. Back to the show, though. We should mention the title sequence, as we usually do. Quite minimal, but in black and white, quite sort of scary and effective, concentrating just on a sort of close-up of an eye with various images appearing in the center of the eye, and then the sort of computer typeface of the titles appearing across that. Almost, it sort of reminded me of the Tomorrow People titles, but in a much sort of slower, more downbeat way than that very effective set of titles.
Yes, that's right. It would have been made at about the same time as the Tomorrow People title sequence.
Yes. And as we've said, this was originally filmed and broadcast in colour, but unfortunately, only black and white episodes survive, with the exception of episode 6, where there is a colour version, which is on the DVDs we've been watching. But that particular version has a damaged soundtrack, and it's also sort of top and tailed. We don't get the opening credits, and it ends very abruptly without the end credits. So it's not a completely intact colour episode. But apart from that, we do have complete episodes of black and white.
Yes, I suspect those episodes were from a film copy that would have been used for distribution purposes, possibly for international distribution for broadcast. The Jensen Code was broadcast on the ITV network running from February through May of 1973.
Okay, so that's our production notes. Now, we've mentioned the DVD, which brings us, of course, to the availability. And fortunately, here in Region 2, I can report that ever-reliable company Network DVD put out a release in 2009. All the 13 episodes in their black and white glory, but also it's got that part of episode 6 in colour for you to look at. Apart from that, the only extras really are some PDFs on the discs, which include plot synopsis, some cast details and some publicity stuff that would have gone out at the time. But there we are, currently on Amazon.co.uk for £12. Not available on any of the rentals as far as I can see. Can't find it on Netflix, iTunes or Love Film over here. But certainly you can get hold of the DVD at the moment. Meanwhile, in Region 1...
In Region 1, there is no release. And it is not available on Amazon either. So over here in North America, this is one that you would need to import if you want to see it on disc. Although I believe the full serial is currently on YouTube. Is that correct, Damon?
Yes. When I looked this week, everything apart from episode 8, for some reason, was up on YouTube. So it's there at the moment if you want to get hold of it and have a quick look.
But of course, that DVD is available, so that's certainly the way to see it if you can.
Our preferred option.
So next time, we will look at a few more of the details of the Jensen Code, go a little further in the story, and talk about some of the science fiction themes in it, which are certainly there. We will also discuss a little bit about where this fits in with children's television and children's adventure television in the UK in the 1970s.
That's right. We've talked about a few of them recently. We'll be talking about a few of them again in the future. So it's a good opportunity to perhaps put these in context. And of course, we'll do our own reviews and give you our recommendations of whether you should actually track down the Jensen Code. So all this and more to talk about next time.
Yes, absolutely. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. We are part of the Geek Culture Network, so if you go to thegeekculturenetwork.com, you can find us there. And we have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us that way too.
You'll also find us on the Voice of Geeks streaming radio. That's an internet streaming radio service at vognetwork.com. We go out on Monday and Tuesday nights. There's several other geek-related shows you can find there. So if you're interested in all sorts of genre television, movies, and gaming, go along to vognetwork.com.
Yes, absolutely. Plenty of good stuff there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much indeed. And until next time, it's Eamon in England also, signing off.